Making Small Talk with Jesus. Chapter 5. Have Mercy.
A long time ago, making small talk with Jesus, help me lighten my load.
It was officially called Mercy State Hospital for the infirmed and mentally disabled, but everybody in town just called it Have Mercy, or simply the Nut House. Hundreds of folks from town worked there, so it was damn near impossible to quietly commit someone without the word spreading like a rash in a whorehouse. Back in the long gone days, nobody knew anything about postpartum depression or its symptoms, not in our parts anyway. Most folks I knew were poor, so they were semi-depressed already, worried about keeping food on the table and a roof over their heads. Plenty of people just moved forward as best they could, usually following homemade remedies prescribed by family or friends, like plenty of rest, a night on the town, or meetings with their pastor. The large majority of folks tried to drink away their misery. In most cases, this led to suicide, injury, or death from a car accident, with the occasional soul being saved through divine intervention. But none of our town's depressed would have ever considered the idea of committing themselves to the Nut House. Nobody, that is, except my Lexi. Our baby girl was stillborn on Tuesday, June 6th at 12:58 a.m., just a minute shy of my exact time of birth. I'm no believer in horoscopes, so I don't know what all that means, but I do know I don't like how it feels. The 24/7, 365 of it is in my memory. Maybe that's my problem with it, and Lexi's problem with me. All through the pregnancy, Lexi kept saying she wanted the baby to be born on my birthday. How cool would that be? We'd have double birthday parties, and that it would be spiritually heightened our relationship. We'd be like twins, our souls connected. So now, every day when she looks at me, guess what the first thing that comes to her mind? She hardly looks my way anymore, let alone touches me or wants me to touch her. Since baby girl died, Lexi has worn the same clothes every day, a dark green blouse and a long black skirt, right up until the incident in mid-July. Look, I knew she was depressed. Who wouldn't be? And maybe I should have paid more attention, but I'd just been promoted to assistant program director and began working the 3 p.m. shift. It was a lot more responsibility, and granted, I spent a lot more time at the station, but it was also a shot at making something out of myself. Was it selfish of me not being home? Maybe it was, because I sure felt relieved when I left. I didn't know what to do when Lexi started crying at the drop of a hat. She wasn't eating or sleeping much. It was obvious she felt guilty about what happened. I must have told her 1,000 times she had nothing to do with it, that it was God's will. No sooner I said that, she stopped going to church. She even stopped playing her R&B, except for her repeatedly playing this one tear-drenched record, I Wish You Love by Gloria Lynn. The lyrics in the chorus bothered the hell out of me. My breaking heart and I agree that you and I could never be. So with my very best, I set you free. During this mess, JT was in eighth grade, and all he wanted was his loving, happy mother back. To see her toothy smile again and hear her high-pitched laugh fill the entire house. He even missed her singing off-key or listening to her theory that poor white trash would rather vote for rich white politicians who kept them down than join forces with black folks voting to improve their lot. It was one of her favorite topics, talking about how stupid they were. Why is mom still acting so strange? JT asked me. Strange like what, son? I woke up last night and she was sitting on my bed crying. I asked her what was wrong, mama. And you know what she said? What'd she say, son? She whispered in a creepy voice, "You're lucky to be here. You're lucky to be alive." And then she got up and left. That's the third time this week. I told him the same thing I told her, that everything was going to be all right, that time heals all wounds. Daddy, who's the guy with the black hat? What guy? A couple of nights last week, a guy wearing a black Stetson pulled his Firebird in front of our house, and Mama sat in the car with him for about an hour, maybe longer. I asked her who he was, and she said, just an old friend. When Lexi was released from Have Mercy, Mama came and stayed with us. She cooked and cleaned for 2 weeks or so, but really the most important thing Mama did was liven up the place. She always was a great storyteller and quick with a joke. She made you laugh at yourself with her self-effacing ways. JT was thrilled to have the two most important women in his life in the house at the same time. He loved his grandmother's wisecracking style, but Mama had her work cut out for her when it came to Lexi, who was still melancholy. She wasn't crying all the time anymore, but she would retreat to our bedroom for long periods of full-on quiet. On Mama's last night with us, I woke up after 3 a.m. and Lexi's side of the bed was empty. Both our vehicles were in the driveway, but there was no sign of her. I was headed back to the bedroom to put on my Levi's and boots to go search for her when the lamplight went on in the living room. I found Mama sitting there on the couch. Lexi left about half hour ago wearing her nightgown and slippers. She got in her friend's Firebird and they snaked away at low speed with the lights off. I'm sorry, Junior, to be the messenger. I sat down next to Mama. She put an arm around me and pulled me close. I came here because I thought I could help y'all patch things up, but this ain't no needle and thread job. I've tried to talk to her, but she won't even look me in the eye. She seems disconnected, so far away, so inaccessible, I said. After a beat, Mama said, I don't know what that means, but if you think it applies, it's Lexi's word, not mine. One night at the loony bin, I went to the visiting room and there she was with two of her junkie friends. She had her back to them, staring out a window. The others were huddled up, whispering to each other, probably planning to rob the pharmacy or something. Anyway, when Lexi sees me, she damn near smiles. She gets up, hurries over, takes my arm, and walks me back to the hallway. She walks me right up to the elevator. Then she pressed the down button. For a hot minute, I thought she was going to say, please take me home. But she reached into her bathrobe pocket and handed me a piece of paper. I unfolded it, and inside was this dark poem she had written called Inaccessible. After I read it, I tried to counter its negativity with a positive appeal for love, family, you know, the bright light at the end of the tunnel stuff. But she dismissed it with a wave of her hand. The elevator arrived, and she pushed me inside, then blew me a kiss goodbye. Well, I take it, Junior, that it wasn't a love poem. No, ma'am. It certainly was not. It was more like a suicide note, which I showed the duty nurse who called Lexi's psychiatrist. She read it to her, and the doctor immediately put Lexi on 24/7 suicide watch. We both went quiet for a while. Mama, I believe my heart is broken. This experience has taken me down to zero. It feels like I've been thrown hard by a bull, knocking more than just the wind out of me. Jesse, I know you haven't forgotten the story of Jonah and the whale. You used to have me read it to you over and over again. Jonah said, when my soul fainteth within me, I remember the Lord. You've got to reach out to the Lord. He'll help you get through your strength back and get through this. You'll need it, because what's important here is JT's welfare and peace of mind. He don't need both of y'all off the reservation, son. You hear me? Yes, ma'am. Let me tell you one thing about women. When we make up our minds about leaving, we draw a pretty hard line. There is no going back. And I'm sorry to say it, but I think Lexi's crossed over. Mama poured us both a glass of Canadian whiskey from a demijohn she kept under her bed in case of insomnia. We sipped our drinks quietly for a spell, and then she suggested that maybe it was time I let JT get himself a puppy. It wasn't long after I agreed with that that she asked the impossible. Promise me you won't do what you're thinking. I opened my mouth, but nothing but a rush of air escaped. Mama poured more whiskey in my glass. Cowboys don't turn the other cheek. If you want to win her back, kicking his ass or worse ain't gonna get it done. Going to jail ain't gonna help this situation either. Think on it, Junior. That's all I do is think about it. My wife is out there in the middle of the night with another man. I don't know where she is or if she's coming back. Hell yeah, I want to hurt somebody. Why do I always have to be the good cowboy? Why? Because your son's welfare is more important than both of them. Besides, you look good in a white hat. I drank the whiskey and looked into Mama's warm eyes, and she cracked just enough of a smile that I felt a momentary sense of grace. I'm truly blessed that she's my mother. I'd do anything for her. I promise. With her mission accomplished, she went off to bed, and I promised her I would try to get some shut-eye, too. But first, I took the bottle into JT's room and sat by the side of his bed, listening to him breathe for a while. Then I went to my bedroom and pulled down my prayer box from the back of the closet. I took out Lexi's poem and read it again. Inaccessible. Kill me. Make me inaccessible. Inaccessible to love and pain. Inaccessible to the future. Now, before I'm seized, captured, and boarded. Hurry, start killing me. I want to be inaccessible to love. At dawn, I went outside and sat on the front porch and watched the sun fire up across the horizon and begin burning off the morning fog. The soft light sparkled through the top of the trees. The plains were waking up. Mountain bluebirds serenaded each other. And down a ways, I could make out the wave after wave of sagebrush rolling onto the wind-blown grass at the edge of the road. Out of the mist, seemingly out of nowhere, Lexi appeared, walking toward the house. In the middle of the road, clad in only her nightgown and slippers, she was walking into the wind, and as it rushed across her, it tossed her blonde hair and pressed her gown to her body, showcasing its classic statuesque symmetry, so seldom celebrated in today's world, the skinny. She's tall and graceful with a pretty face, no longer in the full flush of youth, but by no means without its charms. Damn, if just seeing her didn't put me at ease. My anger boiled down, and I was fixing to continue my passive pattern of forgive and forget. But right then, a fantasy jealousy moment flashed in my mind. When Lexi reached the porch steps, I stood up and shouted, "Where the hell you been, woman?" As soon as I said it, I wish I could have snatched it back. I startled her with the ferocity of my voice and my threatening manner. I'd never raised my voice to her before. She rushed past me to the front door, opened it, and stepped inside, then just as quickly came back out. "Jesse, I'll be leaving later today," she said anxiously. "I'm sorry." "Leaving? Where are you going?" "I don't know yet. But I'm truly sorry for all this. If I've caused you any pain, please know it wasn't intentional." Then she turned and went inside the house. Suddenly, all the air left my body. My knees buckled and I sank onto the porch. I put my head in my hands and cried.
Making Small Talk with Jesus, a country ballad, is produced by Quincy McCoy and Laura Privis. Editing and sound design by Robert Hollywood Rhodes for RJR Productions. Theme music by Beth Custer. This novella was written and read by the author, Quincy McCoy.